Well, Joe is coming to the microphone. Paul Chappell asks, is there a copy of Martin Rose's paper available for him? Is there one available for Paul Chappell?
I'll be on the microphone here. How's everybody? This is Steve Boston, and I really haven't prepared much of a speech, but I just want to let you know how gratified I am that there are so many great people out there. People, especially up on the stage, but all of you. There are people that told me when I was contemplating speaking up about this, that no one would stand with me. And I believe different. And I'm glad that my beliefs were not shattered. And I appreciate it very much. I'm very thankful and gratified for people like John Turner who couldn't be here. Briefly, John Turner spent 10 years in the revenue office in the collection division of the IRS. And shortly after I resigned, he drove all night long from Las Vegas to Southern California so that he could meet me and tell me how, about the same time that I heard DB Kidd on the radio, that he has come across the information himself and came to the same conclusion that I did. And it was tough for John because his father-in-law had spent, I believe, upwards of 30 years as a chief in the collection division of the IRS. And John could not tell the people around him why he was resigning. And I really felt for that man because with the IRS, so I tried whenever possible to quote, actually right now, the person said, put quotes around it, so that I know, I can say that, I can testify that exactly what that person said. And Mike said, he's talking about Toto in the movie, and he says, Toto does something. You know, Toto is like a catalyst in the movie, but Toto is always running underfoot, and you don't really notice the dog that's always there, right? But it's the dog that is the catalyst, the dog that helps to pull back the curtains to what's going on. And in a way, Toto is like a little skull tiger. He's always there, and he can always be depended on to move things forward. And I just encourage each and every one of you to be self-fighters out there. Take the knowledge that you've gained here and you've gained through your educating yourself and spread it around, spread it to others. And I think we'll all be better off. I think that's really about it. But again, I'm just, I'm very proud to stand with all of you. And I feel like I'm among friends. And I really wish that, I still wish, that the commissioner and all these people in the Internal Revenue Service would begin a dialogue. Because I used to investigate tax cheats. I think I have a reasonable basis for knowing what a tax cheat is. And I have yet to meet one in this room. So, thanks very much, and over the
road. Um, Yeah, my question wasn't supposed to be answered since they seem to not allow you to testify in court. And I understand that Mr. Chappelle is a tax attorney and a former tax court judge who certainly would be someone who, you know, if you could have dialogue with him and see if he agrees with your theory of the processes, he would be the one who would be able to testify. And couldn't that be something that would be worked out so that her people won't be defenseless and without someone to testify on their behalf?
One of the excuses that the judge used was that something to the effect, I don't want dentists there talking about the law. And, you know, of course, you come back to the defense attorney where, well, dentists are not going to talk about the law. He's going to talk about a little investigation that he did and what he ran up against. And you know that a jury hearing that information, it would really, really affect their decision. So I don't know, they come up with a lot of excuses. But just so you know, when they say in court, there are ways that the court can make the decisions that they make, and jury can make the decisions that they make. And it doesn't necessarily mean that what's written in the law is passed by our Congress and passed by the legislature is, you know, said anything different than what it says. When a judge tells you that this red rose you see in front of your face is really black, you know, but I would think, I'm not an attorney, but I would think that would cause a significant due process problem, because you're supposed to obey the law, but you can't keep track of what the law is.
But couldn't Mr. Chappelle testify as an expert on tax law?
I would imagine that he could, but he may run into the same problem. The government does not want him within 1,000 miles of that business plan. One other thing I was going to tell you is that you know, everybody makes sacrifices, or everybody goes through things that they're not prepared, that they didn't know what happened, and what you already asked. I recently got my own transcript, not all of it, but a portion of it. And there's a little notation on there that says PDT. Does anyone know what PDT stands for? You are the first to be told that your master, courtesy of the Internal Revenue Service, has been labeled a potentially dangerous taxpayer.
If I might comment, ma'am, just elaborating on what Judge said in response to your question. The courts deal with issues of fact and issues of law. What the court will allow in the courtroom are legal arguments and facts. What people, I think, need to do, the message that Dave Bostic and others have left with us, is do the research, with or without your attorney, but get the information, ask questions, file reports.
Doctor?
Yeah.
But Paul has a serious vision problem, and he didn't quite realize he was that close to the platform. Well, in any event, Sam, what the judge will try to do is keep attorneys from interpreting the law to the jury. They can make legal arguments, but there want the jury and the judge, of course, to apply the law to the facts of the case. What people have to do is get into the evidence their attempts to obtain answers, their submission of their
logic, how they arrived at the decision to do what they did. Get that submitted, you know, to IRS in the case of willful failure of file cases. And then, as Whitey Howard did, have all of that come out before the jury. And let the jury see that the defendant has time and time again asked the IRS and the state tax boards that to show him the law that requires him to file and pay. Okay, Sherry Jackson, are you here? Hi, Sherry. Would you like to say a few words?
Good afternoon, everybody. Can you hear me okay? I'm a little bit crooked. I just found out yesterday that I was supposed to speak, so I did write something up because I don't like to ramble, and I have some points that I need to get across to you, okay? First of all, since most of you just found out about me yesterday in the paper, I wanted to tell you a little bit about myself and my story and who I am. I am a servant of Living God, first and foremost. I'm a wife of 13, going on 14 years to a husband. I have two children, 18 years old. I am an ex-IRS agent and a CPA. I was working in Internal Revenue Service 7.5 years, and unlike Don and Joe, I left before I found out about this issue. I left for family reasons. My children were 1 and 3, and it became a 3-ring purpose trying to go and be Gestapo queen and run a household. So I went out of private practice. I started doing a little bit of this and that in accounting. And from 95 up until 99, things just went normal. In 99, I started hearing from different tax clients and different people, hey, I heard you don't have a tax law. And instead of jumping off the cuff and saying, oh, that couldn't be true, I said, In the back of my mind, knowing that at some point or another, I'm going to do the research. But in 2000, I had an overwhelming amount of people come and ask me about this, even pastors. And I felt obligated to do this research. So around July or August 2000, I started doing the research. And being prompted by God and a $50,000 reward by Winnie Conklin, I started researching. And I looked, and I looked, and I looked, and I looked. And I could not find a law that states that American citizens are liable for the income tax. And then I got mad. I found out about We the People and their work. I found out that the government has not responded to the simple question, where is the law? So I must go out and tell people. I am mandated to go out and tell people. Now, being that I'm a Christian and being that I am black, I'm going to talk to you a little bit from those two perspectives. From a Christian standpoint, do you realize that without the income tax, thousands of mothers could leave the workforce and work from home or homeschool, producing intelligent, moral children. Develop and thrive, aiding poverty, drug addiction, homelessness, and teen pregnancy without zoning strings attached. Now, I can also guarantee you based on a track record of faith-based programs, that these ministries would not only be more successful than their government-funded counterparts, but they also would be a decrease in the crime rate, the drug rate, and pregnancy. From a black woman standpoint, black people in the not-so-distant past finally were free from slavery. We began to make progress as productive, intelligent American citizens, only to realize that we have an invisible set of shackles on our hands and our wrists, on our ankles, the income tax. And right now, I challenge Wabian Gume of the NAACP, Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, Louis Farrakhan, the concerned black clergy, the Congressional Black Caucus, Joseph Lowery, and Martin Luther King III of the SPLC. So stop concentrating on racial division and get your CPAs, your attorneys, and your membership to research the legality of this invisible chapter. Unless you respond to this issue, our people will continue to be in slavery. I challenge you to stop living in the 60s. This is 2001, and the income tax is devastating our people. There was just a board post on my street on Friday as I went to the airport. The marshals couldn't step out on the front of somebody's house. This is devastating. I challenge you, when you find the truth behind the income tax, don't sit on the fence. The income tax is destroying our people. Don't hide behind your positions or your prestige. Take a stand. In closing, I'll say this. It appears to me that this is a black and white issue, but there are those that are hiding behind shades of gray. They're calling us tax thieves. They're calling us fanatics. They're calling us weirdos. Now, you can call me fanatic, you can call me a weirdo, you can call me a kook, you can call me fat, you can call me thin, you can call me bozo clown. I don't care what you call me, but I have one question, and I challenge the media to ask it along with me and stop just quoting rhetoric. Where is the law? Where is the law?
First of all, you drive an hour there, you spend 3 hours,
and just talk. You don't accomplish anything, you just talk. And then you drive home every day. But he's getting ready for the show one morning. Something came across the computer screen. Something about this guy. The guy from his position as a special agent in the Criminal Investigation Division of the IRS in the San Jose office, actually, concluding on his own time that he was enforcing the code that required voluntary payment of no payment was compulsory. Of course, he's Joe Madison. But of course, he would not have looked into these issues had it not been for the fact that he was cruising around in his car with his gun and his badge and bulletproof vest and his siren and whistles that he had in his car. And he was listening to the kids talk on the radio about these issues. And he began to look into them. So anyway, Dean, it's all your fault.
Yes, how are you doing?
Now, Dean is here. You've heard. Okay, a couple of other people. Let's see, there's another new kid on the block beside the American Veterans of Domestic Defense. So there's this alternative media out there, as I've come to learn. The Bypass, the Good American, the Spotlight, World Net Daily, other alternative media. And I learned not too long ago that they have formed an association, the American Media Association, and they had their first convention last November. They have over 100 members. And it has, of course, it's the alternative media that's been reporting on these issues for some time, but unfortunately the masses are not meeting with the Bypass and Free America and so on. They're reading the Times and Washington Post and so on. So we don't have a lot as well. And the executive director and the president of the association took a train ride, a 3,000-mile train ride to be here today. And he brought some pamphlets which describe the new American Media Association, which he invites to distribute. And he also has on a table, I think the table is over here on the left, he has some application forms. I would ask that one representative from each table approach the president of the American Media Association to doing his job. You know, our laptop over there, preparing the report that is electronically going out to all the members as we speak, as well as soon as we finish speaking, it'll go out. Go to that table and pick up 10 copies of the pamphlet and a few copies of 10 copies of the application form. We'd like to do that much, at least for the American, they in the back. I'm sorry, those forms are, the pamphlets and the forms are at the back here where Joe Madison is sitting at that table. Let's not interrupt a correspondent at work. Okay. Let's see. I know the people have asked for the microphone for just a minute or two. I'm sorry, I don't wear a watch, but it's just how it is. It's late, very late. Let's hear from Bernard. Bernard, if you can keep your remarks for a minute or two, we appreciate that. Then, after Bernard's finished, if anyone has an announcement to make, a brief comment, has to be brief. We'll time it down to the minute, 1 minute. There are these two microphones, so leave together the microphones, and take your announcement at the microphone. And Bernard,
so it sounds like I'm going to be the last speaker. No, who is it? Oh, Bill, of course.
I don't know why you're
okay.
Thank you.
Just to, I'll make it very brief, but I want to clarify one thing about dollars. According to the Mint Act of 1792, which was the first Mint Act after the Continental Congress, it was defined that a dollar was specifically 371.25 grains of fine silver. That act is still on the books. It's never been repealed, even though the dollar has been all but obliterated except for name only. So, thank you for your question. Oh, it's going to come. My name is Bernard von Nordhaus. I am the senior economist of NORFED, which is an acronym for the National Organization for the Repeal of the Federal Reserve Act and Internal Revenue Code. Thank you. Quick show of hands of people that are aware of either NORFED or the American Living Currency. Holy cow. I guess we're doing a pretty good job. Basically, I'd like to thank you for being aware of it. For people who are not aware of it, I'd like for you to become aware of it because we offer a totally different solution than anybody else that brings to this forum, and that is very simply an alternate currency, which is 100% backed up by gold and silver, 100% redeemable gold and silver, 100% constitutional, and 100% legal. Lawful. Well, I don't know about lawful. We can talk about that. Because we're not a legal tender issue. In any case, I actually designed and developed this currency after 22 years of research, and after we launched this currency, in answer to a personal question that I had, and that was, what can I do? After I learned the truth, I really wanted to do something. I wanted to scream or something or other. And I looked at my different contacts and different unique things I had, my abilities, and I decided that bringing out an alternate currency in line with Ed Griffin's book, Creatures of Jekyll Island. And in response to your question, Bob, and the 17 points about why we should repeal the Federal Reserve, I agree with every single one of those, which are pretty well enumerated in Ed's book, 604 pages. And anyone who is interested in the Federal Reserve, other than the Pablo that was served up by the attorney before me, then I would encourage them to read that book, because there is a sinister, fraudulent, deceptive, deplorable situation which is found in that institution known as the Federal Reserve, and it must be repealed. One last quick word here, and that is that I think what we all need to realize is how much more vulnerable the government is to what they would let on. They intimidate us, they frighten us by being a bully, when in reality we represent a lot more power here than what they would wildly ever think was possible. Let us remember that there were a bunch of cowards that went off and murdered women and children in Oklahoma. Don't ever forget about the deeds that they have done and our moral obligation to repulse what the government would do. I would like to answer a lot of questions about the currency. I'm sure you have them, but it's late in the day. I will be here tonight. If you're interested, seek me out. I'd be happy to share that with you. Thank you. Website contact information. Well, the website is really neat. It's NORFED. www.norfed. That's NORFED.org. It was founded by me as a philanthropic project, as a nonprofit entity. We devote all of the money that we make from exchanging the credit card reserve notes to the American Liberty Currency towards repeal. And in answer to the other different questions about how to deal with the government, we deal with the government by simply denying them the use of the money. They do not deserve our money. And this little sign pretty well says it. Return to the Federal Reserve, be your own bank, start using the American currency, and return America's values $1 a time. Thank you very much. One last thing here. I know that you all saw yesterday's USA Today, but I don't know if you saw the B section on Monday. You should actually pay a little attention to this because we are now saying that there's going to be maybe early signs of not good. This remark comes from Ethan Harris, who just happens to be a senior economist like myself, except that he works for Lehman Brothers, and Lehman Brothers was one of the founders of the Federal Reserve. When the insidious situation we have here, when they create the policy, give it to the Federal Reserve, crack the economy. Thank you very much.
There are a number of questions along that line that I think I'll really quickly before we hear from our final speaker. I understand there is no tax law. What is to stop them from passing one? The Constitution. Congress, as is the case with the state legislatures, are allowed to pass any law they want to pass, provided the law does not conflict with the Constitution. And that's probably, I described it as doing, that is probably the reason why the tax law is voluntary. You heard earlier. If it were otherwise, it would be in direct conflict with the Constitution. So, that's why the 16th Amendment argument becomes so important. If fraud was committed, it's got to go down regardless of the move. It's got to go down. And according to the New York Times, we look at the New York Times Almanac 2001. I wish I had Chase Johnson was so good. But this is a copy of the cover of the New York Times Almanac 2001. It's a copy of the local bookstore. They have an interesting piece on the Internal Revenue Service on page 161. And they make it very clear that the federal government uses the guidance of the government, guidance power, to impose a direct tax on a 5-16 million. So at least the New York Times thinks so. Okay. So we have one more speaker, and we do need to dedicate this room by 4:30, so we don't have a lot of time. But no one of these conferences would be complete without hearing from Bill Benson.
Yeah.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And as I always say, it's a pleasure to be here with Bob Schultz because he always puts on a fantastic program. Today is an exception. Really, a super program Bob has put on. And what Bob tells you about the things that are coming, he wants everybody to become a part of it, and so do I. Because if people don't help, if people don't contribute to newspaper ads, whatever, the fight's going to take a little bit longer. So I'll still win. Part one, ladies and gentlemen, is what the Internal Revenue Service, I'm going to tell you, is scared to testify. Then it wants me to testify and say, do not want your banisters to testify. But the amazing thing with this crazy federal government, I had a federal marshal knock on my door and subpoena me to testify against an individual in Honolulu, Hawaii. He said, sir, are you going to be there? You bet. So the United States Attorney says, Bill, want you to testify as to what bad guys this individual is. I said, maybe he is and maybe he isn't. If you want me to testify before the grand jury, I'm going to talk about the 16th Amendment to the United States Constitution. No, we can't have that. I said, but that's the only way I'm going to testify. I said, remember one thing. Let's assume that I go ahead and testify the way you want me to. But here's the bad guy. And you're forgetting the defense. When the defense starts to question me, they're going to say, Mr. Benson, are you not the same Bill Benson that offered volume 1 and 2 of The War That Never Was? Absolutely. And I told the United States Attorney, here comes your 16th Amendment argument, and this guy is going to watch. He took the palm of his hand, smacked his forehead, said, oh my God, I never thought about that. That was 5 years ago. They still have to come out. I've heard a lot of talk today about records, etc. Records, as those of us who go to court quite a bit, one of the things that judges will say, the documents speak for themselves. And yes, they do. Because when I traveled in 1984 to all 48 states in the United States, capitals of each and every one, I gathered 17,000 certified, notarized documents such as this. This is the state of Kentucky. In the state of Kentucky, on February the 8th of 1910, on page 487 of the Senate Journal, it says that only 9 senators voted for the amendment and 22 voted against it. Yet, well, I'm the case not. Then on February the 25th of 1913, that the state of Kentucky was the second state to have ratified the 16th Amendment legally, correctly, and properly. It never happened. You understand why they don't want me in court? Deal with it. The document speaks for itself. There are 17,000 certified, notarized documents such as this. Then we can go to Volume 1. And in Volume 1, there's a very interesting document that I named the Golden Key. It was the document that I found in the National Archives of Washington. And on page 10 of that document, it says, in the certified copies of the resolutions passed by the legislators of the several states ratifying the proposed 16th Amendment, it appears that only 4 of those states, those ratifying the 16th Amendment, while those submitted by Arizona, North Dakota, Tennessee, and New Mexico have quoted absolutely accurately and correctly the 16th Amendment as proposed by Congress. The other 33 resolutions all contain errors either of capitalization, punctuation, or wording. Minnesota, it is to be remembered, did not transmit to the department a copy such as I held up to Philander Knox, the Secretary of State. The last page, in that 16-page memorandum, it says, but the Secretary of the Governor has officially notified Washington, D.C. that they have ratified the 16th Amendment. When does the Secretary to the Governor have that sort of power? One of the things that will happen if I ever get on a witness stand, there will be an opportunity, I believe, that I'll be able to call a federal judge. A federal judge who has sort of heard my case. Federal Judge Paul Plunkett said that if his species is correct, there is no law to violate.
Remember what I told you, I had 17,000 certified notarized documents. 17,000 documents that I had to produce to the court, to the prosecutor. And that takes about 34 to 38 reams of paper. That's a pretty high set. I want Judge Paul Plunkett on the witness stand because he has said, I have read his book, The Law That Never Was. And he went on and on to praise everything that I did, how I did it, and so forth. Judge Plunkett teaches constitutional law at two universities in Chicago. So now you can understand why I want him on the witness stand. He will be your witness, or mine, or anybody else's. Paul Plunkett says, I believe that his book, The Law That Never Was, which I have read, that puts him on a witness stand, is the work of a man who investigated the 16th Amendment and came to certain conclusions about it and wrote a book about it. And I do not consider that this case is any mark against Mr. Benson. I am ignoring that to the extent that I'm somehow supposed to reflect badly on him. And if anything, it makes an argument for him, because free speech in this country is protected. And when the day arrives, when it is that we will not have the United States of America, at least as we know it. He is a person who has convictions and beliefs and stands up and talks about them and believes what he says. And there isn't any question about that. On July 2nd, on July 2nd, 1999, we were in Washington, D.C., and you've heard the questions here today. Have you filed your income tax return? And I said, I've waited 15 years to get behind these microphones in Washington, D.C. And no, absolutely not. I, Bill Benson, absolutely, completely refuse to file a 1040 tax return under our present taxing system because I will not permit this federal government to make me a criminal. Because of the documentation information that I possess and the documentation that I have sent to the courts and to the judges and the Congress of the United States, every member of the Congress of the United States in 1987 received a copy of Volume 1 and 2 with the names and gloss on the bottom in gold like the book is outlined. And it was hand-delivered by UPS. And I did get some response from some of the congressmen. I had a congressman that lived two doors from me. And I said, Marty, and then was Martin J. Russo, what are you going to do about the situation? He says, nothing. I'm going to only sit by, watch and see what happens, because the issue belongs in the Supreme Court. Now, on July 2nd, when I made the statement that I did, I'll make that statement again today, because now we have not C-SPAN, but we have CBS 2, as I understand it. And if I want this to go out to the federal government, I challenge them again. Later, what are you waiting for? You know where I live, you know my address, you know my email address, you know everything about me. Knock on my door. Come and get me. Please indict. Let's get this issue of the 15th Amendment on the road once and for all. Given the courtroom scene, Judge Paul Plunkett is on the witness stand. You go through his background because he teaches constitutional law at several universities in Chicago, which is nice. Because he teaches constitutional law.
The first question, of course, would be to Judge Plunkett. Judge, will you tell the ladies and gentlemen of the jury, after we read the state of Kentucky, but we'll have him read it, when in your wildest dreams or comprehension will 9 ever become greater than 22? If you could convince that jury of this, how to take to jail again now? Don't wait. You can't. They cannot. There's 17,000 certified Norlam stocks. There are 2 books. There isn't any way that they can dispute this documentation. Absolutely none. So, ladies and gentlemen, Bob says I have 30 seconds, so I think they're about up. So, once again, I make the challenge to the federal government on CBS. Please, CBS, play this one. I don't want to be on the cutting room floor with this one. Tell them Bill Benson has once again made the challenge. Indict him! Coming down! He's not filing a tax return. He is making money. He is selling books. Okay, you're set.
shit and somebody out of that looks. We've got some people at the microphone. We really have to dedicate the room now, so we have to be quick. If someone has a quick announcement.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. Let me talk something.
Okay.
Father graciously gave me leave to make a quick announcement and request to everyone who is my name is Joan Priestley. I'm a medical doctor in Alaska. Who also left as one of the finest law libraries in the country for students, I can explain later. This is a request to everyone who is presently doing their own primary personal legal research, just like I've been doing the last 5 years, dusting off your old treasury decisions, reading through internal revenue, cumulative bulletins of present and historical issues of recovery, federal regulations, that kind of thing. There's no reason for us to toil separately and slowly reinvent and unravel the same wheel within wheels. So if anyone who is doing their own legal research could meet me over in this corner after we adjourn, and let's get an email and phone and fax list going so we can start accelerating pooling our research. Also, anyone who is or thinks they might be on the business end of a criminal lawsuit or specifically for willful failure to file, initiated by the IRS, please see me also. I have some really the information you will want to pursue. Thank you very much. So right after we adjourn, right over here in this corner, I'll be there with waving my pad because I want to network with those people doing their own legal research. Let's start sharing our plural to take the word on here. Thank you. Thank you.
The 240th anniversary of James Otis's great speech against the use of assistance, 24, 2001, the speech led to the Fourth Amendment. And you can read more about it at www.getawarrant.com. www.getawarrant.com.
Did I hear you say getawarrant.com?
Getawarrant.com.
Did you copy that something you're doing that?
That is
correct. Great. Thank you. I'd like to thank everyone here. Stay where you are. So we just need to speak to them and get off to the benefit of all of us. Thank you.
My name is Charlie Alcalis. I currently have a hearing scheduled in federal district court to speak on the building for firing you for second to the security number. February 22nd at 11 a.m. in the chamber of the federal district court, and I'm representing myself. So any help, greatly appreciate it. Charlie Lynn Alcalis.
Well, the service announcement, I'm Mark McCoy. I'm looking to share a ride to BWI this evening. So, anybody want to BWI? I'd be more than glad to hook up with you.
Thank you. Okay, Mark. Anybody up here?
Bob and I just wanted to encourage everyone to take the ad. You can buy copies of it, send it to the Bar Association, send it to the State Society of CPAs, and send it to the American Institute of CPAs. Ask questions, pressure on this. Never know what'll happen.
Everybody has a local chapter of the American Bar Association in which you live. Yes, sir.
Hello, my name is Sal Solaro. I think one of the other things we need to do is have an American Indian